I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. I'm very excited about today's show because once again, I get to interview a former student of mine who has gone on to write incredible books. Well, actually, Guadalupe Garcia McCall, a novelist who is going to join us today, was published before she even joined our online MFA, but she recently came out with two other books, and I think they're just going to keep coming. She's a fantastic writer and a wonderful person. So stick around, and we'll talk to Guadalupe Garcia McCall. Guadalupe Garcia McCall is author of multiple novels, including Under the Mesquite, which is a novel in verse, and as well as Summer of the Mariposas and Shame on the Stars. She is a high school teacher of English in San Antonio and a graduate from our online MFA in creative writing here at UTEP. And I had the honor of having her in multiple classes. And now I have the honor of dipping into all of her novels and reading them and talking about them today. Guadalupe, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very excited about being here today.
So you're a teacher, is that correct? You teach high school?
I do. I teach 10th grade English.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And what are your kids doing while you're on the air, right? Are they sitting back and listening to you?
They actually are excited about hearing that they can listen to this online.
Nice.
So I told them about it. I said, I needed to go do this. And they said, well, can we listen to it? And I said, I will give you the web link later.
Oh, well, welcome, Garcia McCall's English class. Welcome to the show. We have a lot of shows that might interest you, so join us. And let me ask you something, Guadalupe, and you have to be honest. And I know this is a difficult question to ask because you're a teacher, and teachers have to, have a certain set of standards. Which kid in your class do you hate the most?
I'm kidding. I love them all. And they know that.
Yeah, I bet your young people are just, incredibly blessed to have you as a teacher. I know you've had me as a teacher, and I've been incredibly blessed having you as a student. The energy that you bring to the classroom. Let me ask you, the energy that you bring to the classroom, I would imagine, must be as full of light as the energy you bring to your writing.
I try to impart that. I try to show them that writing is a huge part of my life and that's why I love it so much. But I also talk about reading because they're connected, They're
right,
connected.
Absolutely.
You can't be a writer without being a lover of literature.
Right.
And so I try to bring that too, how much I love literature.
That's right. Writing and reading are the same act. In fact, if I guard my mornings so I could write before I come to the university and do all my administrative and professorial duties, I guard my mornings and writing, and that includes reading. If I spend a morning just reading something that's great, that's writing.
Yeah. Well, it feeds your heart, and it feeds your mind, and it feeds the soul, and it feeds right into that writing. It makes you want to go and do something similar on the page. We get that, and it feeds us. And we consume it and somehow create something new with that.
Absolutely. And so what kind of, do you get to choose the books that you teach in your English class?
I get to pick some of the curriculum. Most of the things we do as a team. And so I have to bring it to the table and say, hey, I want to do this. And my team is great. We don't do something unless we all agree that it's a really good piece of literature and we want to attack it together.
Oh, so you bring a book to the table and it's around the table are other educators and you say, I think we should be using this book.
Right. It used to be for a while there that we were given a curriculum. But even within that curriculum, we've always been fortunate in this district that we've been told, throw things that make sense, that connect with what you're doing in this program.
Right, right.
But we've gotten away from that, from the program, and we've actually come to a point where we're choosing things that go with the teaks, with the essential elements. We're saying, well, this would be good for this, and this would be good for that, and then putting it together with, tried practices that we've done. Like, I've been doing this 29 years, so I can pretty much tell if something's going to work
right.
or not.
Oh, that's a great experience to have. And can you tell us about a book that you brought to the table that was successfully accepted by the others?
Well, I actually want to say one that I didn't bring to the table, I didn't know about until it came to us in the form of that program. And I loved it so much that I cannot stop talking about it when I meet with teachers, but things fall apart. Mm-hmm. Things fall apart, but you know what? That's one of my favorite books that I've ever read. And it came to me, and I was surprised that I hadn't heard of it. I was surprised that I hadn't seen it. And so now, when even though we're not even using that curriculum anymore, it's the one that I keep coming back and saying, you know, I really think we should keep this one in here. I do bring a lot of poetry, though, a lot of poetry that I believe in. In some of the classics, but also some of the newbies, you know, some of the stuff that I'm seeing online, I just bring it in and say, let's talk about this one.
Right. So you're able to supplement the curriculum that you're given with your own examples.
Yeah, right. And I even bring some of my own. I create things for them, you know, that are born out of what we're doing.
You know, I'm recalling a passage or a part of Seven Story Mountain, the Thomas Merton autobiography, when he writes about what makes a great teacher of literature. And he's talking about a Shakespeare professor that he once had. And he says that what made that professor great was that the professor was so excited to bring out the greatness of the work. And I could see you doing that, showing them your enthusiasm for what's great about literature.
Well, we love looking at literature from the lens of the writer. Mm-hmm. And looking at it and saying, why did he do that? You know, out of all the words, why would he pick that word?
Wow.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so just taking it down to that lens and microscopically looking at it and going, what was he thinking when he did this? Why would he do that? And so always thinking from that writer's lens, I think that's important.
Right.
I think it also makes them understand that this isn't just something we're reading.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're actually trying to get into the writer's mind.
Uh-huh. You know, that's interesting that you would say that, because you know, I'm just kind of thinking about it as you say it. But to go into the writer's mind, try to figure out why the writer was doing that, as opposed to entering into a book as if you were entering into a landscape, just to go in and experience and to pull out your own thoughts about imagery or language or theme. Are those two different approaches? And are you approaching it then more as a writer or more as a teacher of literature that is canonized or supposed to be great somehow?
Well, I actually do both. It's a journey. You take that journey. First, you look at the picture that's being painted. You look around the room. You notice the curtains. You say, hey, what's that thing on the carpet? You know, why didn't anybody clean that up? What's going on in the room or in the space of that story? But then once you've summarized, you've paraphrased, you've discussed everything, the conflict, the settings, everything like that, then we get into the writer's lens, and we get into why of these things.
Right.
And so it's almost like a process. It's like, you know, the writing process. It's the we call
Absolutely.
It the reading process.
Yeah. Well, that's brilliant, because basically you're teaching writing.
Yeah.
And I bet the students, the young people, I would imagine, are incredibly inspired to write after spending a year with you.
Well, I would hope so. You know, I would hope that it's something that sticks with them. I would hope that it goes beyond the testing, because I'm in the testing year. I try to always tell them, you know, that's just 26 lines on a test.
Right.
There is so much beyond that, that we do need to, you know, give it its place in the curriculum, and we do need to do well on this test. But if you're just a good writer, then you're going to do well anyway.
Right,
you
right,
know?
That's true.
And if you just are inspired to write by what you read, then there's nothing you can't do in life.
Right.
And so we talk a lot about the importance of reading and writing.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because you think that the things that would make young people, to give them a boost in their careers, to help them out, to equip them, would be either coding or writing, and both of them really are creating a complex way of thinking and sharing it with others.
Yeah, it's a lot of looking at it critically. You know, there's a critical lens that has to be applied to everything, and just opening up their eyes about that, how everything's connected, you know?
Right, right. And you are a fantastic novelist. You have, I lost count of how many novels you have, because aren't you coming out with another one?
Yeah, this is my fourth one coming out in the fall.
Wow, and you're a fantastic novelist. You have a web page. I think you have this headline that says, "The world belongs to the dreamers." Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, when I first got the web page, I just was this was years ago when the first novel was even coming out, and I was thinking dreamers is just dreamers, you know, people who take a chance, take a leap of faith, who know that there's got to be more than what everybody says you have to do, mm-hmm. more than towing the line, right. you know, more than just towing the line. And I kept thinking, the dreamers, the world belongs to those of us who are not afraid to jump, you know. But then it became this concept of the dreamers, our students that are coming in with those dreams in their heart immigrating into our country. And I thought, you know, I absolutely adore them. that is where it went, because I do believe that. I'm an immigrant child myself.
Right.
I tell people, yes, I'm fluent in English. Yes, I speak and write it well, but I will always be that immigrant child.
Right.
I will always be that little girl who did not know English and who still, to this day, struggles with words.
And being a dreamer is so important, not only for a writer, but anybody who wants to succeed and in their lives is that ability to dream, to imagine.
Oh, yeah. To take a leap of faith and say, I'm going to take that, you know, road less traveled. I'm going to do what nobody else is telling me. Nobody's telling me to do. It's something I need to do because I have this dream, I have this goal, and I'm going to accomplish it.
I think I'm paraphrasing Edgar Allan Poe in saying, those who dream only at night are at a disadvantage to those who are always dreaming. Your dreams become really your motivation. And tell me about how you got into writing books and how this love for teaching and this love for dreamers fits into that.
I started teaching out of this need to do something with my life that would sustain me, right?
Uh-huh.
It's where everybody is in college. I was a drama student about to get a theater arts / English degree. And I sat there that senior year and I thought, okay, what am I going to do with this? Okay, I'm going to teach. What is my favorite place in the world? School. School was always my favorite place in the world since I came in at 6 years old in first grade. I loved school. School was where teachers loved me, where teachers patted me on the head and said I was a good girl, I was doing a good job. I was, you know, I was dreaming. I was dreaming of the English and doing something fabulous because that's what my father said was going to happen. We were going to come to America. We were going to learn the English, and it was going to be a wonderful life, and we were going to be successful. So here I was in college, and I thought, what do I want to do? What do I want to do with this, you know, this gift of English and this gift of drama? So I thought, I'll teach. And I taught 2 years in Eagle Pass in drama. I did theater arts and communication, and I loved it. But here comes this moment of truth where my husband can't find a job and we have to move to San Antonio. So we moved to San Antonio and the only job I could get was English. And there were lots of openings for English. So I told my husband, I'll do it for 1 year. 1 year turned into 10.
Wow.
Because I loved the kids. The students at this district that I'm at are like me. A lot of them come from Mexico. A lot of them are Mexican-American, 99%, 98%, something like that. I had a lot of students were from ESL students, and I connected with them. I connected with their place in this country, with that struggle of understanding another language, speaking in another language. I can still remember having to teach idioms in those first few years because they didn't understand idioms and they didn't understand what that meant. And so I thought, these are the same struggles. So after 10 years, I had this particular group, and they were so cute. But they were boys who were only into basketball. They didn't want anything else. They didn't want to talk about basketball. They would play for an hour and a half outside, and they would come running to my room every morning. And I could hear them. You could hear them running to my room. And I would say, slow down, slow down. They would come in and they'd be all sweaty and they'd be like, it's hot, it's hot. And I was like, sit down, sit down. Your body will slow down. You will cool down. And then we can get to reading and writing. But they didn't want anything with that. You know, they wanted to talk about that game outside. They wanted to talk about who was cheating, who had a foul, who, you know, took the ball from them illegally, all kinds of crazy stuff. So I'm at the end of the year, and I have not made the progress that I wanted to make. And by that, I mean that I had not inspired them to want to be writers and readers,
mm-hmm.
true readers and writers. And I wanted them, not for them. I wanted them, and I would tell them that, yes, I want you to get the MBA contract. I want that for you. But I want you to be able to read that contract before you sign it.
Right.
I want you to understand exactly what is in that contract, decode it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need for you to understand English. And, you know, who knows? You might love reading so much, you might become a writer. And so I wanted them for them. I wanted to extend themselves into that atmosphere, that peace. And so what happened was, I went to an in-service and somebody said that if you just take something out of the curriculum, one thing that you love, and bring it to them from your heart and say, I love this, and teach them that you can capture their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you capture their hearts, then you can move on to other pieces in the curriculum.
Right.
But not until you've done that, not until you've done the hard work
right. Of
inspiring them. And I was laying in bed that night thinking, what do I love? And I thought, I love poetry. I love poetry. Poetry is where I live. You know,
uh-huh.
I can do this. And so I went in there the next day and I sold it. I told them we were going to learn a different poetic device every day. We were going to do similes and metaphors and personification and allusions and all these other things. But we were going to do them through a writer's lens. And so I did it, Daniel. I taught my little heart out. I had a mentor text. There I was. And at the end of it, they all just looked at me. They just looked at me. And I thought, what is it? Why won't you write a simile? And they said it was hard. They said it's hard. And I said, no, it's not hard at all. I said, it is so easy. So what I did is I started showing them my process. I said, you know, I close my eyes and I think of a moment. Haven't you ever had that moment where you're driving or you're cutting the lawn or washing the car and a memory pops into your head? And they were like, yes, yes. And I said, that's a poem. That's a poem right there.
Right.
You don't know why you remember it, but if you write it down, if you explore that memory, what you saw, what you heard, what you smelled, what you touched, who was there, why were you there, you might come up with the reason for that memory. And that reason for that memory is your poem. So when I did that, they saw the process, and they saw me going into memory and remembering my mom and my dad and swimming in the Rio Grande and my hair floating like seaweed and my brother who ate all the hot dogs and he looked like a shark with his big old belly. And so once I said all that and we wrote it together on the board, I wrote it for them on the board, they sat there and they were like, then that's it. That's all we have to do. We just have to remember something and we have to write about our family. That's it. And I said, yeah. And throw some similes in there. And then we'll talk about it. So it was just opening them up, you know, getting them to understand that.
Right.
That concept of what writing is, that it comes from inside you and it comes from your family and your experiences and your heart. So they sat there, Daniel, and they wrote this whole thing out. They wrote these beautiful memories and they handed them out on the the way out. And I'm standing at the door thinking, oh, my God. That worked. I have words on a page from my students. and I read them, and they were really cute poems. They were really beautiful. Some were sweet. Some were a little hard. Some were tough. And some were just, I mean, they had these memories on a piece of paper, every one of them. So we did it for 30 days. I taught them a different poem every day. That worked so well that I did it every year. And then after 10 years, I had all these poems, and those poems became Under the Mesquite.
Which is a novel.
It's my first novel in verse, yeah. But it was born from teaching, and it was born from that love
wonderful.
Of creating with a kid.
That's a beautiful story. We're talking to Guadalupe Garcia McCall. I'm wondering, because, you know, you write very clearly what is considered in the business YA novels, young adult novels, which can be taught in high schools and I know are taught in many high schools. And I'm wondering, as a high school teacher and as one who creates literature that high school kids are reading. When you're in a book, like when you were writing Shame on the Stars, and you approached a particular scene, and you understood as you were writing this scene that there's an issue that's emerging that's really important for young people, how much of the teacher took over, took control of that scene in order to make sure that what the reader received from it was positive?
You know, I think as a woman and also as a writer, I'm always in that creator mode, but also in the mom-teacher mode.
Nice.
You know, I don't think we can distinguish who we are at heart. And, you know, as somebody, I'm also like that because I raised my brothers and sisters when my mother got sick. And she passed away when I was 17, so I was a mother from the age of 14 on. So I have that lens of always taking care of young people. And so I don't think that I can separate the lens of who I am at my core from who I am as a writer.
Oh, that's a beautiful answer. That really is. I mean, it just shows that, you know, I think one of the things that we do, you know, as we develop, what we try to do is to live more and more in lives that aren't fragmented. And it sounds like your teaching and your writing are not separate. They're the same thing, the same energy.
Yeah, it's my same, and it's my being. It's who I am. And mi corazón, you know, I can't separate that. I can't say, oh, I'm going to put on my teacher hat. I am a teacher all the time.
Nice. Yes, we don't wear separate. We don't wear many hats. You know, we wear one hat that expresses everything we want to do, even the way we interact with our family, because you can't go home and interact with your family in any other way than you would interact with your students. I mean, obviously you speak to adults differently and still that same love and that same enthusiasm and energy.
Right. And la pasión, it's the love of the people that you are in service of. You know, you're in service of your friends, you're in service of your husband, your wife, your children, your students. You know, you're in service. That's what we're here for.
Just recently, Guadalupe, or you say on your webpage that your friends call you Loop. Is that true?
Yeah.
Can I call you Loop?
Please.
Awesome. I love that. Loop, as a writer, as a fiction writer, I see how the poetry has really influenced you. And so maybe I should include poets in this question. But what poets and fiction writer are your antepasados, the ones that have really had an effect on who you are as a writer?
I want to say that early on in high school, I discovered
as an Edgar Allan Poe. Wow, really?
Yeah, and I never went back. I was like, this writer is so dark.
Oh, yeah.
He is so sad. And there's so much love in that sadness.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much passion and love and everything.
Right.
He feels it all at once. And talk about not separating yourself, He just has all the emotions in there. And so I discovered that in his poetry. I loved his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, as I was moving into, you know, books, into big books, I discovered José García Márquez, 100 Years of Solitude.
Uh-huh.
And that's the book that blew my mind. That's the book that made me think, I can be a writer. I want to be a writer. I want to be Gabriel García Márquez when I grow up, you know,
And
that particular book especially.
Oh, yeah. Did you read it in Spanish the first time or English?
In English, and I want to say I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
I might have been eighth grade, but I was an avid reader, and I was always at the public library in the summers.
Yeah.
So I want to say it was the year between 8th and 9th grade.
Wow.
And I would walk 3 miles to the public library because my father was busy and my mother was sick, and I would just walk, and I needed to go to a place that was quiet.
Okay, did you walk in the snow ever?
Yeah, I walked in the snow uphill both ways.
Yeah, you know, I remember reading that book. I wasn't as young as you when I read it. I think I read it when I was an undergraduate, when I just became a writer and somebody turned me on to it. And it changed my life.
Right, right. Those images, and they are so personal because you see them and you recognize them and you recognize those people and you recognize the style, the way of looking at the world in a magical way. In that way that is everybody else would seem magical, but to us, that's normal. You know, right. To us, that's our world. And so I recognized the people, too. And I thought, I love this. I love the way he expresses himself.
Yeah.
And those long, long sentences. Oh, I just was in love with those sentences.
You know, I think of the sentences of Garcia Marquez, and I think of the sentences of another one of my literary heroes, Toni Morrison. And I think of their language kind of like a magic carpet that I just get on and it takes me anywhere. It could take me anywhere. I think there's a connection between the realities they're able to help us to accept, which has been called magical realism in some conversations, although I'm not convinced that that's the great way to explain it, but that I'm just willing to go anywhere with them because their language is so beautiful and they can just take me anywhere.
I'm actually trying to right now get a book published as my first picture book. And one of the lines, and I thought, that's it, that's the line that explains how I feel about language and how I feel about storytelling, is she says something about I want to sit under the willow and tell you my stories in long, lazy hilos. And I think,
nice.
That's right, that's it. You know, they're long, they're lazy, and they're like huge, long threads. And you can just see them being spun and around and around. They're so beautiful. And that's what Marquez does for me.
Wow. I'm talking to Guadalupe Garcia McCall, novelist, teacher, and also a very new, very recent inductee into the Texas Institute of Letters, which is quite an honor. And I know because I'm inducted at the same time as you. We were, a part of this group of new inductees, which included you and some local El Paso people, Sasha Pimentel, Marcia Dottesdale, Alfredo Corchado.
Right.
But congratulations. And how do you feel about that?
I was shocked to be on the list. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, there's Daniel and here's Sasha. And, it was an honor, but it was also so wonderful to see people that I recognized,
right,
that I loved from my school. Because when I was at UTEP, that was like a wonderful experience for me, those 3 years of being mentored by people that I respected and whose work I really loved. And so to see them at the same time, I was like, it's like a reunion. It's
wow.
A UTEP reunion.
That's funny because I forgot to mention, really important thing for us here locally is that you did graduate from our online MFA in creative writing. I had you in multiple classes. You were always, among the most enthusiastic students, participated so much. I don't know how you did it, teaching and then writing and then taking all those classes. But it was definitely a pleasure to have you in our program and to read your work. And I hope I see you in San Antonio for the induction celebration. I guess you live there, so you'll be there.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to see you at the banquet. I'll see you at the readings. I'm going to be at the book festival. I'm going to sit right there and watch you read.
Awesome,
take
awesome.
Pictures.
Guadalupe, or Loop, as I call you. Loop, thank you so much for joining us in Words on a Wire. I wish you the best of luck with all your fantastic novels. And
thank you.
And if your students are still listening, you guys are really lucky to have a teacher like Mrs. Garcia McCall. So they're very fortunate to have you.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here.
I'd like to thank my good friend Loop for joining us on Words on a Wire. Check out her webpage at GuadalupeGarciaMcCall.com and, of course, read her novels. I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank our producer, Lauren Terrazas, and thank you for once again joining us, and we'll see you next time on Words on a Wire.